Reveille, reveille, donks.
Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
It is, let's see, the 5th of August, 2020, and it is time for Morning Combat. Hello, everybody. My name is Luke Thomas. I'm not sure if I can hear anybody, but you can see the gentleman to my left. He is the Iceman, the man in the hat. He's my friend and yours. It's Chuck Mendenhall. Hi, Chuck Mendenhall.
What's up, Luke? Feels like a minute since we did one of these, and it was only like 2 weeks ago, my friend. I missed you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Hold on, Chuck. I actually can't hear you for some reason. Sure enough, at the beginning of the show, my fucking ear pods don't work, or whatever they're called.
Okay.
Here we go. Here we go. Hold on.
All right.
One more time. Let's try it again.
All right, man.
There we go. How are you, Chuck? Sorry about that.
I am well, my friend. I said it hey, feels like it's been a little while. Can you hear me now?
For some reason, I can't hear you again. Okay. Uh-oh. What the fuck?
All right. Hold on. All right. This is reminiscent.
Now we're good.
Okay. This is reminiscent of the old beat days.
Okay.
Kind of low-grade operation we're running,
Chuck.
Here.
How are you?
I am well. I should tell you this time that I'm really shitty, man. I should lie to you now. But no, I'm really well. I said it feels like a few minutes since we've done this, and I just was thinking about it. It's only been a couple of weeks, so I'm happy to be back, man. It's always fun. I love the invite, and happy to see you, man.
Yeah, I'm having earbud issues. I can hear you now because I took it off my thing, so I'm going to try putting it in the other ear. This wasn't happening before, but now it is.
All right.
So let's see if this works a little bit better. Let's see if I can get a little bit better results here. Let's try it, Chuck. Let's see here. Goddamn, this is annoying as hell. if it's not one thing, it's the other, my friend.
Yes.
Let's see.
I like real time troubleshooting, Luke. This is fun. This is good TV.
Okay. Now I can hear you right. In my ear pods.
Perfect.
Much better. All right. Very good. Chuck, what a wonderful Friday. It is the 5th of August. Excuse me. Sorry for the trouble with the intros. We're good and locked on now. Now you are joining me from wonderful Connecticut. How is Connecticut in the summer? What's a summer in Connecticut like?
It is, it's like standing in Brian Campbell's shade, you know, because he's the king of this state, right? Like, it's hot and humid and generally miserable, I would say. And the winters aren't much better because then it gets cold and gloomy and ice storms and stuff like that. So the real only good season out here is probably the fall. I would say that that's probably true.
What do people do for like, because I know there's a couple of options. What do you do for like I want to get away to the water with the fam? Where do you go in Connecticut when that's the goal?
Well, you can go down to the Sound, which some people do. I mean, there's like a couple of lakes. This sounds kind of silly, but when you're a little bit landlocked, there are a couple of lakes that have these beaches where a lot of kids go and stuff like that. So those are options. And if you wanted to go to the Sound, I mean, it's probably 25, 30 minutes from where it's a very small state. So you can find water, but it's not generally known for that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be like the beaches that you're used to out there in D.C.
Well, the beaches around here are just full of Maryland purple camo donks with Old Bay under their fingernails. I mean, it's not, you know. There's actually a bunch of nice beaches around here, but they're kind of a little bit hard to get to from D.C. in the sense that, like, Virginia Beach is 4 hours away, which is okay. And then there's like Dewey, and then there's Ocean City, and there's Rehoboth. And some of those are nice, but by the time if you leave on a Friday, bro, like you know, it's an all day trip to get there. Like
I know,
I'm not doing all that shit.
Well, we make an annual trek to Virginia Beach. You know, Sandbridge, that area down in the we make an annual trek down there, and that kind of you know, fills the need for water for the whole year for me. I'm not the biggest beach guy, man, but I enjoy it for a little while if I can drink on the beach and hang out. So it's okay.
See, I love the beach. Also, shout outs to Outer Banks area and the Duck area in North Carolina. Those are pretty fun. All right. On the docket today here, Chuck, let's see. We've got some big news about a big UFC fight. There is a fight night card this weekend, but boy, it is not strong. We'll talk about that a little bit later. PFL is back tonight. We'll give you a brief overview of that. We have a bunch of fights that were announced, sort of smaller ones we'll do collectively. And then we're going to play a little game called Buy or Sell with Chuck Mendenhall. I'm looking forward to that a little bit later. Want to remind everyone, you can give us a follow on social media. Put the graphic up there below if you'd be so inclined. There we go. You can see it there for old Charles is there himself. By the way, Chuck, it's got really nothing to do with your name, but I did see the new Top Gun, which has Iceman in it. As you know, I think I'm the only guy who calls you Iceman. Have you seen the new Top Gun?
Actually, that's probably true, but you have such a cult rabid following that since you started doing that, I have a lot more people calling me that. But you were the first, for sure.
Okay. Did you see the new Top Gun?
I have not seen it yet. It's like, you know how they used to have the Dollar Theater after it made its run at the regular theater? They have it playing at our little town hall like for this week, so I intend to see it, but I have not seen it yet.
It's the weirdest movie. It's very fun. It's like really fun. Like, you should really go see it, but it's really
better
weird
than
because,
Thor.
Well, I mean, you know,
I saw your review, so
I could take a dump in my hand and throw it at the wall, and that's more effort that they put into that piece of trash movie. But what I was gonna say was, it's real. The Top Gun movie is really weird because it's good. Don't get me wrong. Like, you should go see it, but. There's this big mission that everyone has to carry out, and they never name who the mission is against, like what country, what territory, what, you know, organization, nothing. Like, they just
cryptic.
Go through with it.
Yeah, hey, you know, the original goose from the original Top Gun lives in my town here.
Is that right?
Yeah, we see him in the grocery store and you know, about town. A very weird celebrity who lives here. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Neither here nor there. I want to remind folks, if you want to get Showtime, Showtime.com is the label that pays. That includes Bellator. That includes Showtime Championship Boxing. That includes the W. Kamau Bell Cosby documentary on the app. Lots of different stuff. You can stream it for 30 days. If you like it, you can keep it. If not, you can go pound sand. We also have merch, morningcombat.store. Now, you do have merch, because here's the thing here, right, Chuck? We had Rashad on Monday, the guest hosting. He had one MK shirt. We had Danny on Wednesday. He had nothing. I feel like you've got some MK merch, right?
Yes. Courtney hooked it up, man. She like sent me a nice box of stuff. I actually have a coffee mug, too, which is really awesome. But I'm wearing one right now, actually, matter of fact. I'm a donk. Certified donk. Yes. So I do. I have maybe three or four t-shirts, and then the hoodie with your face on it, which I wear in the winter. It's a heavy hoodie, but I love that thing.
It is. Yes, yeah. it's very comfortable. What can I do to get the hat without paying for it? That's really what I want to know, Chuck.
Well, you just send me your address, and I will get you one. And your head size. I need to know that as well.
Well, just the largest
I saw Campbell pimping it out, man. That was awesome. I got like a bunch of sales right after that. I was like, what happened? Somebody must have mentioned it. And it turns out it was the influencer himself who put it out there. So we'll take that, man.
I actually like those styles of hats. I just don't really wear it that often, but I would love to get one. All right.
Yeah.
With that out of the way, and with our tech issues behind us, I never do it, but let me remind folks, I forgot the last two episodes. MK is nominated for the World MMA Awards in back-to-back years. And since I didn't pimp it earlier in the week, let me do that now. You can use the QR code that is on your screen if you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform. Let me read you the link. It's worldmmaawards.com/nominees. worldmmaawards.com/nominees. Chuck, you've been you nominated a bunch of times as well. We won together as part of MMA Fighting when the site won. When was the last time you went to a World MMA Awards event?
So let's see, I was at The Athletic. It was in 2019 was the last one I went to. Dolph Lundgren was the host. It was actually, you know, you went to the last year's, right? Because you guys won. Hopefully you get that repeat. But it was very strange. I mean, the whole vibe of there is very uncomfortable. But generally speaking, it's gotten better over the years because I've been to some of the earlier versions of it. And I think that they've improved it. But it's still a very awkward experience out there.
So Chael hosted when I was there, and I thought he did a really great job, actually. I'm going to guess that they're going to bring him back for another one of those.
That would make sense.
Because you're like, Dolph Lundgren. It's like, what?
It was very weird. I will say that he had a few moments. It was pretty funny. But for the most part, man, the little like skits they do, just so bizarre, man. They're so bizarre. But
some of them hit. Most of them don't. But every once in a while they get one.
But I will say... But dude, I mean, you guys winning last year, that was like, I thought that was the greatest upset, you know, that we've seen.
Yeah. Juliana Pena.
Yeah.
Take that, Matt Serra.
That's my list, exactly. All right.
All right. With that out of the way, let's get to some real fights here. And we kick things off with topic number one, of course. Chuck, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe our colleague Ariel Helwani was the first to report this. It's not officially signed, but it appears all systems go for Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler. Now, this is supposed to be, as we understand it, again, we haven't had a full confirmation yet, November 12th at MSG, which of course would indicate the UFC is going to be back there on that night, which was largely anticipated, but seems it gives us a date, something to look forward to. But okay, first things first, Chuck, when I tell you that Poirier is going to fight Michael Chandler, forget about MSG for just a moment, but now it's on the books. Your first reaction is what?
Barn burner. Because, and I hate, you know, it's weird, I hate putting that expectation on, but I really do think that's the expectation. If you just look at the Gaethje math, right, like both guys had fights with Gaethje, one was a fight of the year, the other was a very memorable fight, and then you say, okay, they're willing to accommodate Gaethje, you know, in his style of fighting and go in there and put on a fight like that, and now they're going to MSG. It has those title implications to it, which is kind of the bonus to it, but I feel like realistically, the bad blood between two very nice guys going against each other on that big of a stage, being the first fight, by the way, that's announced or like is materializing first, I guess, on a fight card that's guaranteed to have at least a title fight above it, speaks volumes. But I just think that those two guys, man, they, you know, I think that they want to put on shows. And like that, when you put them together, and especially kind of in the buildup to this, this is one of the first times I can remember Dustin Poirier being truly, you know, disliking a guy, you know what I mean, going into it. So I feel like it's going to be a really good fight. And I love that it is shaken out where it might have title implications. So I think it's a barn burner. It's going to be one of those great swing bouts that kind of the bang for your buck, right? Like if you're on the fence about buying a paper, you remember that's on it. You purchase the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I don't imagine that this would headline, but I do imagine that it would serve as a, to your point, like an anchor fight on the main card, something that really gives you some choices to make about your purchasing that month. Now, as it currently stands, Chuck, you got Poirier sitting at 2, Chandler sitting at 5. So here's the rest of the top 5. There is no champion, right? In reality, there is no champion.
Right.
So Oliveira is 1, Poirier is 2, Gaethje is 3, Islam is 4, Chandler is 5. Gaethje just lost to Oliveira. We are we have on the books at 280 Oliveira versus Makhachev.
Yep.
Is it fair to say, it seems impossible to deny at this point, for Dustin Poirier having gone up against Khabib and falling short and then against Charles and then falling short, I think that Poirier versus Chandler is a number one contenders fight, is it not?
I think it is. I really do. And it helps that Charles Oliveira now is in doubt. Now, it'll be, especially if Islam is to win that fight and he wins the title, I think that you then have a situation where it's a new guy, it's a new challenge, it's new blood, all of that stuff. So I think that the winner would be, I think, a slam dunk, depending on how the fight plays out with Islam and Charles. But I do think that even if Oliveira is able to win, that if this is a good showing, right, like in the timing-wise and everything else, I think probably it is. I think it's just, it's set up to be that way. And like you just mentioned, where they're at, having to go through, one guy has to go through the other to get to that. So I think it sets up perfectly to be the number one bout. Yeah.
You know, this fight is incredible because to your point, you called it, you know, your first thought was barn burner. I would completely agree. Number one, you've got stakes, as we just indicated. It seems like, again, I want to be clear, as Chuck and I are discussing this, UFC brass haven't confirmed that this is a fully thing. And even if it is, that it's for number one contender. By the way, there could be a couple of things where, if God only knows what happens at UFC 280, is there a world where this one at 281, which is what I'm guessing it's going to be, is somehow for an interim title if something happens to the champion and he's injured?
That's a good point.
There's all kinds of ways that this could be already big stakes, but potentially even bigger. But the action fight thing, two things stand out to me. It's like, number one, bro, for Dustin Poirier to still be an action-oriented fighter this long into his career with as many miles as he has is fucking remarkable. Like, even just like the Alvarez fights and then the Gaethje fights, just those by themselves, not even including the Holloway fight, not even including the Pettis fight, which was actually kind of blood and guts for a while as well, is truly remarkable. And I gotta say this, man, don't you agree? And if you don't, by all means tell me, but I feel like you might. Michael Chandler made the move from Bellator to UFC, at, I thought, the right time, right? Like, if he was going to do it, that was the time.
Yep.
And B, you know, yes, has he been up? Has he been down? No question. He has done both. But in terms of delivering what he said he was going to deliver, which was a shot into the arm, into the division, and to kind of always be that ever-present threat at the top, where now he's in an ostensibly number one contenders fight, I don't know if he's going to win this fight, Chuck. But of course he might. But yeah. My only point is, everything that he basically promised from going from Bellator to UFC, he has more or less delivered on, and then some. This fight hasn't even happened yet. When you reflect on him making that switch, do you agree with me that it's gone, again, not best case scenario, but
yeah.
You know, promises made, promises kept. I will say that.
Yes, and you know, he's exponentially gotten bigger. I think that was the key too. I think that he was people who picked, you know, the Bellator brand has done a pretty good job of making these guys visible, but I feel like once he got to the UFC and you're seeing him against these brand names, it became a different thing for Michael Chandler. He's only 2-2 in the UFC, but somehow, because of the style of fights he's bringing and the, you know, just what he's putting these guys through to get those W's, has kind of translated into, it doesn't matter, like it kind of transcends the win-loss column. Obviously, you can't stack too many losses, but the types of fights he's been putting on, man, he's as advertised. I think the willingness to go in there, take on these guys, ruffle some feathers. Actually, he's gotten very good on the mic too, man. You've probably talked to him over the years. I think that originally he seemed like almost like a goody two shoes in the game, like for the Bellator for a long time. He was doing the Dave and Buster commercials, and he seemed a little religious. He wasn't the shit talker that he's kind of become. And I think that he's playing the game a little better too. But man, when you go out there and you make promises and you uphold those promises, once you're in there, people love you, man. It's kind of that. You know, it's that thing with Israel Adesanya, when there's a big talk, but sometimes the action doesn't deliver on what he's saying. That feels disappointing sometimes. But with a guy like Michael Chandler, I feel like every time he goes in there, man, he puts on one of those fights. So you hate to call it a guaranteed barn burner, but I feel like this is about as close as it gets, right? Like, this is one of those types of fights.
Right. I mean, you don't know how long it might last. That's always the issue.
True.
Right?
True.
But for as long as it lasts, like...
Hey,
Chandler's
man.
Not going to be the guy that jabs and low kicks his way to 5-round victory. It's just not, you know what I mean?
Dude.
It's just not who he is.
Yes, and you know what's kind of crazy about this is it's a Madison Square Garden, you know, once it's finalized, all that stuff. But like Madison Square Garden has been kind of a house of horrors for Michael Chandler. He lost to Brent Primus, remember back in the day, like 2016, a major upset back then. And then he did have the fight of the year, you know, with Justin Gaethje, but he ends up losing that. So he's 0-2 in the Mecca, man. So he's going to have to, I don't want him to go down as the guy who couldn't win at Madison Square Garden either. You know what I mean? So hopefully for his case, you know, or for his peace of mind, he shows up and he gets it done. You know what I mean?
Now, how does this, or maybe it doesn't. So like, I guess the question would be, to what extent does a win here transform anything for them? Again, let's work under the premise for now. And this could be very, you know, it's totally invented. But let's operate under the premise that the winner here does get a title shot. Now, here's the thing. We saw Chandler go up against Oliveira. He got very close, but no cigar. We've seen, we did see Poirier get the interim title against Max Holloway, but then subsequently, you know, his efforts at unifying it or reclaiming it didn't go well. So it's not like we necessarily see them in like brand new territory exactly, but I'm wondering, getting back to that spot, well, I guess winning the championship would be the only thing different, right? If they were actually able to get there and then persevere, for Chandler to go from Bellator, then 2-2 in the UFC, then 3-2, because he would have to be to win over Poirier, and then to claim the title, would be a true, incredibly insane feat. And then similarly for a guy like Dustin Poirier to finally break through in the way that he has, these would be transformative moments. But I guess what I'm wondering is, short of doing that, does getting back to that point, that's not, it's impressive, yes,
yes,
but it's not different, right?
Right. I think history remembers getting fully over the hump, right? Like, you got to be the champion, you got to do some things. It is impressive. I look at, like you mentioned off the top of this, you look at the Poirier's run, especially, remember, he kind of was introduced at such a young age, and then he had that documentary that added kind of this weird expectation to him, like maybe he was going to be, you know, a champion sooner rather than later.
Fightville.
He had the whole, yes, Fightville, which was, it was very interesting. It's actually more fun to watch now, like at a remove and go back and watch it than it was in the day. But, you know, the whole Conor McGregor thing where he was kind of buried, just one of the victims of Conor McGregor during that whole boom period for McGregor. It's kind of remarkable, man. Like you mentioned, he's just gone through a sustained amount of battles in there, some of them wars, and here he is still doing this. And honestly, after he lost that last fight with Charles Oliveira, he kind of indicated like he might not even want to keep going, you know, like he was really, all the options are on the table. And I know some people speak emotionally about that, but when you have a career like his, which is, you know, you kind of move up, but you don't quite get over. You kind of move up, you don't quite get over. Like, and you're always hovering in that space. You can see how it gets frustrating. So particularly from Dustin Poirier's point of view, I think this fight means a lot. You know what I mean? You got to get back there. And I think it would mean a lot to him and his career, his legacy, whatever you want to call it, to not only just get this fight, which is a big one in Madison Square Garden, but then to put yourself back on that radar and then go get the belt. I think that that would round out a truly remarkable career when you look at it.
Now, my brain is full of Swiss cheese, Chuck, so I might be saying something stupid here. And if I am, by all means, help me out. Has anyone gone from Bellator to UFC and claimed a weight class title? Now, obviously, we've seen the opposite. Fine.
Yes.
But I'm trying to remember. I don't think we have. I don't think we've seen someone do that, not yet.
Well, what about Eddie Alvarez?
Oh, yes. What am I saying?
Yes.
He's already
so he's the fuck. He's the one. Yes. Yes, he's the one. I don't I don't believe anybody else has, though. I think he's the one.
Right, he would be the only one. Yeah, sorry. Again, when you're hosting a show, your brain just doesn't work.
I understand.
My headphones barely work. You know what I'm saying? Cut me a break here. Why do they pay me for this job?
I forgot that UFC 277 just happened a week ago, Luke. I don't know. I couldn't tell you much about that card at this point.
Okay, nevertheless, Eddie, you know, Underground King, had a lot of titles and a lot of other weight classes. Still, it would represent something significant for Chandler, on the other hand, to go and do that.
Sure.
I think Chandler has been kind of seen, like, promises made, promises kept in terms of what he told fans was possible. Because he never told them, I'm definitively going to be the champion of the world and there's no denying it. He's always said, I'm there for a good time, not a long time. Nevertheless, for him to go in there and claim the UFC title, especially after losing to Charles in the way that he did, you know, the Gaethje fight was not for a title, but it was kind of thorough-ish in the way that he lost. Dude, that would be big for him as well. This guy, for folks who may not remember, for a long time, like, do you remember when he was fighting Rick Hahn on Spike TV?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Dude, Bellator wanted to make this guy the face of the organization for him.
Yeah.
Eddie Alvarez, I don't think he ever occupied that space for Bjorn Rebney, not in the same kind of way. So for to take that guy, the former face of Bellator, and then for him to go to UFC at the very last good window he had and claim a title, dude, that would be fucking huge.
It would be huge. And you nailed it. I think that he happily took that mantle as being the face of Bellator for the longest time, man. I mean, I think he was happy to do that. But there was the side of him that always was like, just like with any good Bellator fighter, there's always this, what if the partition was down? How would he fare against these other guys? Well, for him to get through the gauntlet that he's gone through and then end up, so he gets through Poirier and he ends up getting a title, that would be huge, man. I mean, I honestly would, then his career becomes almost a study in itself, like going back and looking at everything that he's been able to do. I do think that that would be very, very big, especially given that he fights the style he said. Like you mentioned, man, I mean, it's like if Justin Gaethje had ascended and now was on a title reign, you'd look at him the same way, like, that's not sustainable. It's not sustainable for living, and it's not sustainable for holding a title. But to get it, right, like to win it, that would speak volumes for how good he is given that style.
Fair enough. All right, so let's move on now to topic number two, which is, of course, the weekend's fight night card. All right. I mean, let's just say this up front. I like the main event, Thiago Santos versus Jamahal Hill. It's not my favorite, but I like it. I'm not going to sit here and say I hate it because that wouldn't be true. I really like the co-main, Vicente Luque versus Jeff Neal. Danny and I talked about this on Wednesday. You have the finals of The Ultimate Fighter. I'm going to ask this knowing full well what the answer is. Last time you watched an episode of Tough beginning to end. You can skip commercials or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Beginning to end.
Okay, so I think we did touch on this, but I think I'm with you because I believe you said this. When they introduced, it was a straw weight class, right?
Season 20.
Yes, so that would be the last time, and I really only watched that one because it was a whole new crop. It was a whole weight class, right, like being introduced, so I felt like it was my duty to really know who everybody was. But before that, man, you're probably going back to the heavyweight season with Kimbo Slice. Like, I remember watching that one with some interest, and that was like a full 10 seasons before that. So Tough 10 was probably, like, if you're asking me legit, where you're just watching it to see what's going to happen, it was all the way back then.
Have you paid attention to even 5 seconds of the current Tough season? I'll raise my hand and be like, I've done nothing.
No, I have not, man. I have not. I can't. I just can't, man. You've been in this game a long time, too. It's like the times I've And over the seasons, every now and again, I'll put it on for a minute just to see what's happened. I can't do it. I just can't watch that same kind of drama playing out, the house stuff. The fights themselves I'm okay with, and I try to catch up on those a little bit as it goes on, but I just can't do it. I can't do it anymore.
I'll tell you this much. I don't watch it. And the reality is, like, putting young men with alcohol in a house, young women too, whatever.
They know, yeah.
Well, the thing is this. It's like, dude, when I was living in a fraternity house or, in near approximation to it, let's say 2, 3, 4 years after that, yes, that seemed relatively interesting to me. Dude, I'm fucking old now. I've got kids. Like, you think young men drinking in a house is remotely fucking interesting? All I want to do is go to bed early and not wake up with my back hurting. Like, what the fuck? It's of zero relevance to my life, you know?
No, you're right. There's something about that drama that no longer holds its essence, right? Like, I don't care to see that either, man, at this point.
All right. Well, the Muhammad Usman versus Zach, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name. I apologize. Zach Pauga would be for the heavyweight championship winner, which, of course, Muhammad Usman, the brother of Kamaru. And then you have Brogan Walker taking on Juliana Miller. That one's pretty close in odds, by the way. But let's start with the main event. Thiago Santos taking on Jamahal Hill. Jamahal Hill is an interesting guy, Chuck, for a lot of reasons. I really like his game, and I was watching some tape on him last night and this morning just to sort of see what his strengths and weaknesses are, remind myself, right? And I watched a lot of his fights. Dude, I mean, when he's... I'll say this. When he's dealing, he is phenomenal. Yeah. On the feet, he has... And you saw this in the Crute fight to an extent and the Walker fight, really. He's got a really good ability to play with range in ways that a lot of other light heavyweights don't. And what I mean by that is he'll pressure, and then stop, and then let opponents walk to him, and then he drills them as they just walk right into range. He did it to Walker. He did it to Crute. Now, the Paul Craig fight was a little bit different. I want to talk about that in just a second. But, man, people keep talking about his championship potential. I do have some reservations about it in the broader picture, which I'll get to. But his strengths, the boxing, the range management, do I think that kind of thing is potentially ready for the very high end of this division? I actually do. I actually think that part is very good. Give me your assessment of his upside as best you can tell right now.
I think that this type of fight, when you get a matchup against Thiago, what's his name? The Sledgehammer.
Santos.
When you get,
you're
yeah,
right.
Santos. I was about to say Silva. I'm like, that is not correct. When you get this kind of matchup, it's because I don't want to call it quite a showcase fight, but it usually means that there's a guy like him that they want to see get through this guy on a big platform, a big spotlight, and then so that you can enter that conversation a little more cleanly. I do think that he has shown those flashes. I know that you're the more the analytical guy, like you break down the styles and stuff, but I just like the fact that he does what you said, which is let the fight come to him sometimes and then start dealing. He's one of those guys I feel like needs to kind of activate within a fight. Like you watch him and like he starts to get the rhythm down and you see him when it starts to click and he starts to roll and things start to land. So he's got a very explosive style, a nice style. And I think he's got the personality, right? Like to kind of make people care about him. And that matters in the fight game too. So I see a lot of upside, man. I see a lot of upside. I don't know if he has, what it takes to go all the way in the division, but we've seen him slip, before too. But I do feel like he's figuring things out. He's learning. He's adding more tools. And his upside looks pretty good to me, man. This would be a big step, too. I think, like, kind of getting on people's radars who haven't seen him yet to be in this situation against a guy, a heavy hitter who has, I think he's tied for fourth with the most knockouts in UFC history of the 11. To go in and do it against a guy like that, I think it'll speak volumes for his upside, too.
I will say this, though, about Thiago Santos. I want to finish on this point with Jamahal Hill, but Santos is in a different place in his career. This comes to us from Richard Mann, who works at Fight Metric, and he writes, quote, through his first 18 UFC fights, Santos had a plus 2.85 striking differential. So for folks who don't know what that means you take strikes landed per minute and then deduct strikes absorbed, and even then, he's at 2.85, which is very high. So the plus 2.85 would rank 12th among currently ranked UFC fighters independent of weight class. However, in his last five fights, he only has a negative 0.31 differential, which would put him 150th out of the 175 ranked fighters. Not great. But okay, sticking with Jamal Hill, talk me off the ledge here a little bit. Dude, when it comes to the striking, I don't know how many guys on that division have a whole lot for him. I mean, Ankalaev is obviously a beast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, Blachowicz has seen a lot of different looks. I'm sure he could be an interesting counter, particularly with the kickboxing. But you go back to the Paul Craig fight. Now, listen, Paul Craig is a unicorn, doing all kinds of totally insane shit that a lot of other people don't do. But there was a situation where, if you watch the fight, Craig uses double overhooks, pulls him to the ground, and then tries to go for a submission. Hill gets out of it and then lets Paul Craig recapture the overhook on the right side. And the reason why that's relevant, it's like, try to explain this to people, and anyone who's ever trained understands this. You cannot overstate the significance of allowing an opponent to put a grip on you, any kind of grip, not just the hand grip, or if you have the gi grip with the lapel or the sleeve, but that overhook is a grip. Dude, I mean, if someone makes a grip on you and you know that, that's going to let them set up different things, you have to either A, prevent the grip from even happening, but you have to address the grip right away. He went right back into the gripping sequence. And for me, that kind of indicated, like, I got a little bit of Ciryl Gane vibes. Remember when Ciryl Gane fought Francis? Like, on the feet, Ciryl Gane is miles ahead of that division, right? On the feet, he's just way ahead.
Yes.
But on the ground, his decision-making isn't nearly as good because he doesn't have that part of his game isn't as developed. Now, I'm not saying, Chuck, that Jamal Hill has a bad ground game. We just don't know enough about it. But for example, you take the Craig fight, that's one thing you can look at. Here's another one. Takedown accuracy for Jamal Hill is at 0%. Now, that's not saying he's never... they might be saying he's never gotten a takedown. But what I think that actually says is he's probably never really tried. I'm trying to go back here to the Ovin St. Preux fight. Yeah, he didn't even try. You go back to the Klitson Abreu fight. Let's see. Didn't even try. So for the most part, he just doesn't show you that other part of the game. And I always say this. A fighter can have an A and a B game. And if your A game is so completely dominant, your B game can just be defensive. Think of Khabib, for example.
Yes.
But unless you're that, your B game needs to be developed. I do have some... And by the way, Santos, black belt in jiu-jitsu, I don't know. This one could get a little weird for me.
That's an interesting thing, man. And this is why I like talking to you, because you do think of these things on that level. I do feel like that's the thing about him, is there are some questions as to what his plan B would be. Because we've seen it with, like, Kevin Holland type, right? Like, you're not sure what happens when he's put into deep water in a way that he's not used to being put in. And you see him get dominated. Now, I don't really know, to be honest, how that would play out. Or even if Santos is smart, maybe he does play this type of game. You know what I mean, Matt? Maybe you do try to get it to the mat and see what you can do there. But honestly, man... I don't want to say it's a red flag, but it's one of those concerns. I think that we just haven't seen him in those situations enough. And maybe that's where the intrigue starts to come in. You mentioned like an Ankalaev or one of those types of fighters. I mean, they're very smart fighters and they're well-rounded everywhere. That would be a concern right now. You know, if they were to fight right now, I'd be like, how does that translate? So I think it plays into the same thing with Santos, but I'm just not sure Santos is going to... I'm not sure he's going to actually want to test that. I mean, do you feel like he will?
No, I don't. I feel like Santos has not been the same. I mean,
no. We
always go back to it with these debates about what you're supposed to do in terms of tolerating injury in a fight. And, you know, to blow out both of his knees in the way that he did, you know, there's an argument to make, right? Where, like, this is a title picture. You may never get back here again. Just let it rock, like go through with it, you know, because I don't know if he tore both right away. I think it was a cumulative over time, but the point is, like, you just let it go. But, like, dude, I everyone does this shit in MMA and it drives me up the fucking wall, where it's like, okay, you got to just make that sacrifice. It's like, okay, let's make that sacrifice. Fellas, ladies, if you are going to say something like, let's make a sacrifice for this short-term moment, and there could be a good reason for that, by the way, there very much could be. This one or any other. You must also, like, if I could make them sign a waiver in the argument would also include, I recognize up front that the sacrifice is worth it, knowing full well this will carry long-term consequence. This will carry long-term significance for both his potential quality of life and certainly his ability to compete at a reasonable level past this event. And there is always the discussion up front of how it's worth it without any of the discussion on the back end about what the fuck this is going to do to you. Dude, he is not the same fighter. He is not.
No.
Let's just say it out loud. He is not even close to the same fighter that he once was. And you can draw a fucking clear line in the sand because he had ups and downs before the Jones fight, obviously.
Sure.
But in terms of the style he fights, yeah, the Glover fight was kind of close. He kind of recaptured a little bit of magic. And by the way, saying he's not the same fighter is not me saying he can't win, but it changed him. It completely changed him. And so all the folks who are like, it's worth it. Don't let the doctors get involved, blah, 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 blah. Great. Welcome to the bill being due. How do you intend to pay? It's what I always try to tell people.
I'm sure those same people will be checking in on him 5 years down the line to make sure he's doing okay. And
when he has arthritis at 50, I'm sure they'll be there.
I know. No, I know what you're saying. That's there are a lot of very short-sighted ideas that just persist in MMA. But yes, that is definitely something that's bugged me over the years too, man. And you know, in his case, gosh, you can point to some hard luck cases over the course of the fight game. But man, that guy was so close to beating John Jones. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At least it seemed to me at the time like it was so close. He was so close to realizing something in this game, and now he's on the other end of that. And I don't want to say I'm watching through my fingers with him, but I agree with you that it's one of those situations where you're like, if he flashes any vintage form, it's probably going to come out of his hands, right? Like he's going to maybe get a knockout, but realistically, he's falling more and more into the puncher's chance than he is of a guy that you're like, well, he's a hard, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like he's slipped into that spot now, but he's still got some juice on his name.
Still has big power. I do believe that. He's fought guys like Jamal Hill to an extent, certainly from an experiential standpoint. Like, how many fights does he have? I think he has like 10 or 12 fights, something like that. Not that many. So in that sense, it's nothing really new. But I can't stand these fucking conversations that everyone has all the time. And they never, ever want to acknowledge what the cost of that shit is after the fact. And here we are living through it. And then they dump on the guy, right? They'll be like, oh, now he's boring. Yeah, motherfucker, he had both of his knees shredded, like trying to fight maybe the best fighter we've ever seen that everyone cheered on, like, yay, go Tiago. Can you imagine his Instagram comments at night? Like, you're a fucking warrior. And now I guarantee if he turns in a bad fight, what a fucking bum, fuck this guy, da 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 da. It's like, holy shit, man. They're both there. It's the other side of the coin. It's the same thing.
Don't you get exhausted trying to like fill in the context for people who do this? I feel like I'm in a constant. When I used to do the mailbags at ESPN and later on and stuff, like, you'd always be answering questions like this, like you're talking about, or like just an attitude about something where like, well, you're not considering the whole situation here, especially when you're dealing with like major injuries or stuff like that, where a guy has had to come through it. To just push all that aside is ridiculous, but I hate having to go through and do what you just did, which is like add the context for somebody just to bring them around to the idea that they should, you know, be perceiving this whole situation a little differently. Gosh, I get that. That just goes on and on. At some point, you would think there would be a larger sense of, I don't know if empathy is the right word, but just like memory, you know, of what these guys have been through. But Luke, you've been in this game as long as I have, and I have not seen that develop, man. I mean, I'm still explaining everything just like you are.
Yeah, and then, well, sometimes the debate changes by virtue of the fact that it has to. Like, the fighter pay debate has changed because we now have court documents, and, you know, it has moved, and so as a consequence, so has the conversation. But, like, I've noticed, dude, and that's why I do the five-year thing. I think MMA fandom, for the most part, and, you know, you and I might be different or whatever, but... And there are other different people, of course. But what I mean to say is it lasts about 5 years. About 5 years, people get red hot with it, then they kind of begin to fade. And then the same questions you were answering in the first 5 years, they come circling back all the time. Because, dude, it's new fans who don't have any prior relationship to the sport trying to figure it out. And so I get it, you know. But it tells you that, like, this was the thing that we never talked about. I'm kind of on a tangent here. But this is the thing we never talked about. Like, there was a real concerning time at the beginning of the UFC's deal with Fox where, you know, the ratings were not great. They were okay, but they were some of them were good. Like, the first event they had on Fox was, like, a big hit. I remember I was in on vacation at the time overseas. And, but, you know, over time, like in 2014, the UFC had gone to Brazil, like, seven times, and one of those places was a place called Uberlandia. That's not a joke.
Right.
I was like, that's a real fucking place, but yes, it's a real place. And so there was this question about, like, is there watering the product down? And what I ended up thinking was, like, I was worried that, like, are they just running the sport into the ground? What I got right was that the ratings were declining and there was this lack of enthusiasm and fans were leaving. What I didn't count on and didn't see coming was that there would be this natural life cycle of a new crop that went right in behind them. And then Rousey and McGregor ushered it in and everything else. But, like, there is a real life cycle. Whether it's 5 years, Chuck, you tell me, but it does feel like there's this constant churn, and so we constantly have to revisit these issues.
I think that that's exactly right, because I really started covering the sport maybe in 2007. 2008, for sure, is when I was really involved in the sport. Now, that and under the five-year thing, you would see three iterations of fans, or three, you know, three cycles there. And I would say that that's absolutely true. When I first started covering the sport, and you probably remember this too, everybody's big peeve was that if you came in during the Tough One finale, right? Like, anybody who was old school before that was like, you're a noob, man. You're a noob. You know. And the enthusiasm just kind of shifted as that happened. And then there's been multiple, like you mentioned, the McGregor and Rousey period. I felt like that introduced a whole, I mean, that was the biggest moment in MMA, is when those two things were going, everything was off the hook. There's a ton of money being thrown around in MMA, coverage and everything else. Like, just everything was just big. And now you're into a new one. And I think that I'm the one who's slow to pick up how it's working. But you do have guys like O'Malley and the YouTube generation, you know, and guys like Jake Paul, right, who brings attention to it, a whole new audience. There's a younger audience that's getting involved in it again. It is replenishing as we speak. And so I do feel like, you know, what our central focuses were 5-10 years ago, whatever it was, if they're coming around again, you have to kind of go through it again. Like, you have to actually add that context for those fans. It's a crazy sport. I do think, though, man, like, running all these events all the time, it can't be more than 5 years. Even, I'm sure you've had burnout at some point, man. Like, at some point, you're just like, I can't, dude, I just need a break from this. Like, this is just going on and on and on. Yeah. It's tough to follow, like, for 15 years straight, like, just wall to wall. It is very tough to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, folks are like, what does it take to be one of these MMA journalists? And, like, you know, you had Israel Adesanya being like, I could do your job. And in certain ways, he actually is correct. But it's like, well, I can tell you what I've lost. I've lost a lot of friends. I've lost 15 years of Saturday nights. I've lost girlfriends. I've lost, you know, a life outside of it, basically. Like, you know, you guys want to do this for your life. That's the cost. That's what's going to come with it. Like, you can do the act of journalism. You could be on camera. But the life that comes with it, be very careful what you wish for. Yeah. I'll put it that way. Okay, back to the card as we sit here reminisce about what two old pieces of shit we are.
It's a natural conversation.
It's a natural conversation. In the co-main, now this one is all action. Vicente Luque taking on Jeff Neal. We talked a little bit about this again on, Wednesday with Danny. What am I saying? Saturday. Vicente Luque, this guy who's been up there. Now he's getting a little bit, you know, he might be coming into his prime in the sense of his age. He's 30, but he's got a lot of fights. He's got 30 fights or so. Mm-hmm. He's coming off the loss to Bilal Muhammad. But here's the question for you, Chuck. Before that, win over Nico Price, win over Randy Brown, win over Tyron Woodley, win over Michael Chiesa, who he submitted, by the way. And then he loses to Bilal. But the Bilal fight, while thorough in the sense of, you know, it was arithmetic by the time the fight was over and he was controlled, he didn't get super beat up. He's just 30 years old. I'm going to ask you the same question about Luque, although the odds, I should note, they're very tight on this one. For the main event, they were not. Still, with Luque, I feel like he's tasted the higher end of this division in ways that Neal has not to this point. Your thoughts on his upside at age 30?
Difficult to say for sure, but I agree with you 100% on the resume, the strength of resume. I think that for Jeff Neal, this is the toughest fight he's had. This would be the toughest fight for Jeff Neal. Whereas with Luque, you could say, like, he has had tougher fights, I think. You know, he's fought Leon back in the day. He's had to stand in there against some very good fighters. But his upside, it's funny because he's so well-rounded, like, and he's such a finisher in his mind. You know, like, I think 13 of his 18 fights in the UFC, 13 of them have been finishes, victories that he's won. I mean, it's just kind of absurd that, and he's able to do it, you know, on the feet, on the mat. it feels to me like he's got tremendous upside, but then he does slip. So it's one of those situations where I'm not sure he's, you hate to say it, but I'm not sure, I can't envision him being a champion in the division for any sustained amount of time, or even maybe ever getting it, but he'll always be that guy in the top five for as long as he's going and hold that space. He's not a gatekeeper. He's just a machine. But I don't know, man. I just don't see it. Like, I don't feel like he's as rounded as some of the other guys, or maybe some of his weaknesses could be exploited, you know, by really smart fighters, things like that. I'm not sure he'll be a champion at any point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly is very talented, right? And he gives good fighters tough fights, like that fight for, what you call it, the fight for, as I just mentioned, against Bilal Muhammad. Like, that was hard fought. It was not easy at all, and it went the full distance, I believe. You know, so these are things that are difficult for him. But you're wondering, I think, this is where I'm at. It's like, okay, he's got one or two more corners he has to round before you're like, okay, he's a threat to Usman, right? He's a threat to Colby. Because if Bilal can control him, you would imagine that those two guys could, right, just as well. Mm-hmm. On the feet, though, I'll say, you know, you would agree on the feet, there's not a whole lot of guys at 170 at this stage that I think could give him a problem. Here are the rankings. Let me pull them up here. At 170, so let's go to the top 10. So you have Shavkat Rakhmonov. I guess we'll see. I mean, that dude appears to be a fucking nightmare. Yeah. Right in front of him is Sean Brady, another fucking nightmare. Mm-hmm. But then you have Masvidal. Thompson's on his last legs here, kind of as a guy. Luque sitting at 6, Bilal at 5, Burns at 4. Now Burns obviously is going to be a tough fight. Then you got Khamzat Leon. Yeah, you know what? I'm not sure. Seems to me like there's a couple more corners he really has to round before you can say yes. Obviously a good guy. Obviously a top 10 guy. Maybe even a top 5 guy. But not a championship guy just yet.
Especially when you go through that list, God, man. That is just a murderer's row. And the way that those guys can beat you, like you mentioned, just controlling a fight, like the way that they dominate fights, it's just tough to see Luque getting past some of those. I think he'd be the underdog in more than half of those that you just named. You know, so it's an uphill battle for him, but you never know, man. I mean, it's just one of those things. But he is 30 years old. I think that this would be the moment for him. If he's going to make that run, I think that it's got to be like now, and we'll see how he does. But like Khamzat, and you're mentioning Brady and all these guys, I mean, it's just that's too much for him. I just don't think he's better than those guys, to be honest.
I will say, though, being 30 and having this kind of experience, the next couple of years are going to be interesting. Still, it takes us to his opponent, which is Jeff Neal. Now, Jeff Neal was a guy I think had some hands of steel, Jeff Neal. Remember, he got a lot of pop because he was a waiter. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And I remember talking to him about it, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember I have family in Dallas, and they were telling me that the restaurant he was waiting tables at was actually a fun place for brunch, so I'm told. In any event, though, he's a lot older. He's 11 years older, basically, than Vicente Luque. So he's, what am I saying? What am I saying? No, he's 1 year younger, or older. Sorry, what am I saying? Dude, I need new prescription glasses. Could I be worse?
So he's, I was gonna 30, say, if he's 11 years, I'm missing part of the story. I was like, what?
No. He's about 1 year or so. So he's about 31 or 32 at most.
Yeah.
But okay, but he's kind of been up and down. So he had the nice wins over Nico Price and then Mike Perry, which, by the way, these guys share a lot of opponents in that way. He had the loss to Wonderboy, which was basically one-sided. He had the loss to Magny as well. He rebounded against Ponzinibbio, but then I asked Danny this, and he was like, yeah, but this Ponzinibbio is not the guy from a few years ago.
Right.
It's a different version. How much is what's a reasonable expectation for Jeff Neal?
I feel like he's already kind of busted the expectations. Like, he's already kind of ascended to levels where you're like, well, you've already done it, man. Like, you've gone where you need to go. Like, you mentioned he was a waiter. I remember talking to him. He's like, I wouldn't even quit the job because it's guaranteed money. Why would I quit it? I'm just going to do this on the side. And being like, what? You know, because he was moving up fairly fast. This was after he knocked out Camacho out in Dallas with that head kick. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And you know, since then, I feel like he's just had a pretty remarkable run. The only thing I'll say is maybe he needs to rediscover, like, maybe he's gotten to the point where he's not taking the chances that he used to, because I think his excitement and his upside was based on him taking those chances. Like, he had a bunch of finishes early in that run. The last few have not been like that. They've been more calculated, methodical, and he's starting to lose a couple of these. You'd like to see him kind of rediscover that dog a little bit, that weird, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's not, obviously he cares about his career now in a way that he didn't before, but maybe he needs to throw caution a little more to the wind. I actually think that that's why this is a fun matchup for him, because he's got an accommodating partner who's going to say, like, hey, I'll bring that right out of you. Let's do this. So it's really interesting to see how he fights this. How does he handle this type of fight? Does he do that? You know, does he let it go a little more? I feel like, you tell me, man, maybe you've watched his fights a little closer. It feels like he's been a little more holstered his last few fights out. Like, he's not the same guy who was shooting up the ranks at the when he was coming up there.
Yeah, and remember, in December of 2021, he had the DWI arrest. You know?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Which is not like the end of the world. Like, I know a lot of people have gotten in and turned their lives around. I mean, I'm not here to say drunk driving is no big deal, but I'm just here to say that I know people who have made mistakes like that, but then really cleaned everything up and got around it. And you can't judge a person in totality by one mistake like that, even as potentially sure. egregious as it could be. I think that's the way I would say it. I want to
yep.
be a little more delicate. Nevertheless, kind of made you wonder. It's like he had the losses, and then that happened, and you're like, where are we coming or going on any of this? I tend to think that, like, look, he's with a good team. He's with Saif Saud, I believe, out of Fortis MMA. He has big power. But with Luque, and I would say he's much further behind Luque in terms of overall game development. He has a good skill set to get him where he's at. But to get where he wants to go, there needs to be more added. I mean, it's just really as simple as that. He has to add way more than what he's got. And so it's not just the significance of beating Luque or not. It's the significance of what other things are you doing to develop the game in the middle of your prime, where it's still kind of possible to put yourself ahead in this pack, where now you're seeing it at lightweight and now you're seeing it at welterweight, this next generation bubbling up. We talked about the Saryukians and the Gamrots. Here come the Bradys, Rachmanovs, Chimaevs already here in many ways. There's just a lot going on there. So that's kind of where I'm at. It's like, which one of these guys is actually going to be able to level up past this win on Saturday? In that sense, Luque is a little bit further ahead in the race, although it is close, I will say.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I think that with Neil, I mean, I don't know like how long he's been now full-time, like, into MMA, but I agree with you. I feel like you kind of see, you hate to say this because you're right, he's 31 years old, but I feel like we've already seen his ceiling, and it's probably wrong to believe that because I know that he could still add a lot more to it, but it just feels that way. It just feels like you've seen him at his highest already, and maybe that's the narrative he needs to combat and overthrow. You know what I mean? Like, because I feel like a lot of people sort of feel like that about him right now.
Fair enough. On the rest of this card, there's Terrence McKinney, who is an enormous favorite over Eric Gonzalez. Terrence McKinney, I don't think he's ever been to anything other than a finish one way or the other. So he is an all-action affair at minus 850. Jesus, that is high. But we got to talk about it very quickly.
Jesus.
Yeah, minus 850. That's fucking high.
Wow.
Sam Alvey's still on this card, bro. Sam Alvey's out here doing it. He could tie the record, or I think even set the record. With another loss here with BJ Penn in terms of consecutive losses. I think this would be like nine, potentially.
Explain that one to me. What is it, a modest 8-fight unwinning streak? Like I think he's lost 7 of those, right? Like, how in the hell is he? I don't really understand the Sam Alvey thing. I love him. He's a very nice guy and all that stuff, but like, does he have dirt on the UFC or something? What's going on with that?
Yeah, dude, his last solid win was 2018.
Like, good God, you know, man. Yeah.
I mean, I was in a very different part of my career in 2018.
I know.
Like, you know,
lifetime ago.
Jesus, I don't even know what the answer is there, to be quite honest with you. I listen, it's not like, you know, it sounds like you're wishing bad on him. And
no.
And also, like, there's not a finite amount of roster spots, you know, like they could assign more people if they want to sign more people. It's not even that, but it's just pretty clear that, like, there's no upside here. You could get a win potentially, but like, where is this train going? It's not going anywhere, not in this organization. And so that's kind of a part that's kind of got me. And of course, Ariana Lipsky opens the card against Priscilla Catchwara, a women's flyweight contest. Lipsky entering this contest off of a win, although she had 2 losses previously to that. And then her opponent in this case, Priscilla Catchwara, something of a redeveloped fighter since losing to Shevchenko in the way that she did. Ooh. A little bit. She comes in a win over Ji Yong Kim. Anything on this card stand out to you besides the fights I've mentioned?
I like the McKinney fight because I think that after he got his first loss, right? Like the first loss in the UFC, you always want to see how they respond. And I just, you know, he's such a dynamic guy, and when I was looking at this card, you're right. There's not a lot of imagination to it. There's not a lot of things that are going to pique your interest, but for sure, I still got my eyes on him. So I'd say that on the prelims, that's the one fight I've got circled.
All right. Fair enough. Let's move on to PFL. Don't have a whole lot to say about it. It is tonight, the PFL 7. It's an interesting time for the PFL. So let me pull up my notes here for this particular event if I can. Now, this is the weird one. You've got Anthony Pettis taking on Stevie Ray in your main event. They just fought a few weeks ago, Chuck, where Pettis loses via like a sort of rib crank, I guess is the best way to describe it. But this is the semifinals of the lightweight tourney. So it's not like that doesn't count. It counts, but they both were still able to move on based on how points and everything else are established. Well, I got to tell you, Pettis, I admire his willingness to get out here and continue to fight. My man's taking a lot of damage.
Yes, he is.
A lot of damage. I think this is a winnable fight. I do. But I wonder if he loses this, Chuck, where does Pettis go from here?
I don't know, but it's not a good place, man, because he would then be 1-4, I believe, in the PFL since coming over. And, you know, to lose back-to-back fights against a guy he would have, I think we can agree, would have destroyed at earlier parts of his career. I don't know. And, you know, they're paying him, right? Like, the PFL's paying him a lot of money, and I think there's some pressure that comes with that, obviously, to perform. I don't know, man. It's one of those strange situations where, you know, he's chasing this new kind of goal, but if he can't achieve it against guys I think he should beat, to be honest, I mean, even at this stage, I'm like, I think he should still beat, you know, Stevie Ray. And I honestly, he probably should win in the finals if he makes it. Like, this is set up for him to win. So, but if he's not able to get there, if he's just not able to do it, the writing would be on the wall. I feel like for some people, it already probably is. But it's a weird one. I think the red flag for me a little bit too is, you know, you've been in this a long time too, like where accountability when you lose and just kind of what you say afterwards or what you start to believe. A lot of times I don't really like what Anthony Pettis says after a loss. Like, he was basically saying on this last one that he didn't really, it was hard getting up for the fight because he knew it didn't really mean as much. And, you know, like he kind of already resolved before the fight that it didn't matter. But I'm like, it always matters when, you know, you're in a situation where you're being brought in as a showcase talent, like a guy with a big name and all that stuff. It always matters. So I don't know. It's not even just his record that concerns you. It's just maybe the way he's viewing the game. And, you know, it's just his basic, like, hunger for the game still at this point. Some of that's in question, too. So I'm not sure, man. If he loses this one, I feel like it's time for a little bit of introspection from him, I'm sure.
No doubt about it. And again, the odds are raised. I mean, it's a pick 'em. It's a pick 'em. Minus 110 in either direction. You saw the first win, the first fight anyway, that Stevie Ray had over him, where he did that little rib crank, which was nasty, but pretty fucking cool at the same time. Listen, Pettis are, you know, you want guys to, it's weird. You almost want guys to have a foot out the door. Like, when they start doing commentary gigs, or now he's got his own little promotion and whatever the fuck else he's doing, you know, you like seeing that because it's like, okay, you're beginning to set the groundwork for something else. You know, what would be great for Pettis is if he wins the whole thing, gets the big check at the, you know, the end with a whatever, and then can say he made all this money and then he can go about his day. That would be nice. And if he loses, it's hardly the end of the world. I mean, he's out here pushing his best, but I genuinely worry. Stevie Ray is long in the tooth, but not. I don't think he's taken nearly as much damage as Pettis, although maybe he has. Who's to say? But the thing I worry about with Pettis is he goes through with all of this, really continues to take more injuries, and, you know, doesn't have a whole lot to show for a post-UFC career in the end, which, again, I'm not here to slam him for. I don't know, man. When these guys get to a point where they're getting injured, they have as much damage as he has absorbed over the course of his career, and they're still out there trying to beat guys who are, I think, Stevie Ray. I'm not going to say his career is unfulfilled. I don't know that. But he's not achieved what Pettis has, right? So it means probably by definition significantly more to him. I just don't ever really like those scenarios. That's the thing that gives me a little bit of ugh.
Well, and you wouldn't be a human being covering the sport if you didn't have some of this, because we have watched Anthony Pettis forever, man. I mean, the guy has been around doing this for a long time. We've seen him at the top of the game. Like, I was watching him recently. I think maybe it was on Ariel's show, but they were talking about how, you know, he was getting those $1 million like bonuses in his mail and stuff like that. He was on the Wheaties box. I feel like actually that's where it started to go south for him a little bit. Is the moment he appears on, like, the biggest moment became like the highest moment he reached, and then he started to decline because he lost the title after that. And he's been hit or miss, but he's been a lot of misses. And you do see him taking an extraordinary amount of talent. I mean, damage. And I know in the Rufus gym back in the day, at least, you know, those guys were sparring hard too, man. So it's just been a long, long career. And I know he's made a lot of money. I don't know if he's invested it well and all that stuff, but he's one of those guys you're like, you've made some good money in this sport. You'd like to see him, if it comes down to that, not continue to take that damage. It's just tough, man. We're human beings who watch these guys. You write about them, you talk to them. And over the course of time, man, it's just, you don't want to see a guy just get repeatedly beat like that. And there are very few graceful outs in the sport. We talk about this all the time, but you just don't want to see him go through too much of that.
Yeah. Now, again, the fight is competitive. Basically, the odds makers think it's 50-50. So he could certainly get the win, move on to the playoffs. And obviously, if he does, in that particular circumstance, again, my notes right here, he would then take on the winner, it seems, of Olivier Aubin-Marcier versus Alex Martinez. This is an interesting one to me. Olivier Aubin-Marcier had a decent run in the UFC, but then basically got ousted on three consecutive losses to Hernandez, Gilbert Burns, and then Armin Saryukian. But you're like, well, that was Hernandez at his very best. That was when Hernandez had like that two-fight win streak where he beat Dariush and then this guy. And then he lost to Burns and Saryukian. And since then, he has not lost a fucking thing. He beat Marcin Held, Daryl Horcher, Natan Schultz, and then the guy who was the winner last season, who has dumb power, Houshman Fio. Mm-hmm. He has had a really nice little run here in the PFL. Something very good is very possible for him. Do you not agree?
No, I agree 100%. I mean, honestly, I think it's his tournament. You know, it should be his tournament. If he keeps going the way he's going, I would favor him probably to win this. And, you know, it's funny, like, I hadn't really thought of that, but, like, those three fights consecutive at the end of the UFC, no shame in losing to Gilbert Burns and Saryukian, right? Like, you lose to guys like that. I mean, these are guys who are way up there in the rankings and all that stuff. So, very tough fighters. I do like the way – I feel like it's this setup is really good for him, because I'm not sure he could ever make $1 million in the UFC, man, but he could do that here. So, I'm intrigued.
Indeed. Now, on the other side of the equation for this main card, you have it's a light heavyweight. So the main card is basically the lightweight semis and then the light heavyweight semis. The one that is most interesting to me, there's one between Rob Wilkinson and Delon Monte. That we'll talk about that in just a second. But the one that I find much more interesting is the bout between Josh Silvera and Omari Akhmedov. Omari Akhmedov kind of got bounced from UFC. Good fighter, not great. Then he's taking on Josh Silvera. For folks who don't know who this is the son of Conan Silvera. Conan, you might see, is the humongous guy that's always in the corner of Amanda Nunes. He's been like a staple at ATT forever. This is his son, who is undefeated, and it should be noted, Chuck, moved to this position with a win over a guy that everyone in the PFL who I talked to or who was there secretly was telling me, like, this is the guy you want to pay attention to. This is the guy. His name was Martin Hamlet. And Silvera polished him off in the first round with a head kick and then knees from the clinch, according to this. I saw the fight, the highlights. We talked about it here on the show, but you get the idea. He is very good, but he's only 9-0. Size this one up for me. How do you assess this matchup?
Well, I think that is the factor. I know, and it's funny too, because these guys have a little backstory too, because they were both teammates, right? Like they've trained together. They know each other. Maybe that will actually play into, it could go either way, obviously, but maybe that plays into the inexperience. It actually covers up for some of that inexperience. Just knowing who Omari is and what he can do. It is an intriguing fight, man. Like, Omari, what did he have, like 15 fights in the UFC? He's a guy who stood in there against guys like Weidman, and, you know, he's fought a lot of good guys in the sport. it's cool to see him have like some kind of other path in, you know, in the PFL and to be doing this. It should be a fun one, man. I think that Josh, like just in hearing his interviews, seems to me like a pretty cool guy in terms of who he is too, like just his story and his dad and everything that's going on. He's been around the gym since he was like 8 years old, 9 years old. And I just, you know, this is his breakout moment. It's kind of, it reminds me a little bit about Ray Cooper back in the day when he was first coming up in the PFL. He just had this look to him that you're like, kind of sneaking in there and doing stuff in this league and becomes one of their guys. So I think that he's got a little bit of that vibe, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he shines tonight. You know what I mean? I think he's got that.
And by the way, dude, if Silvera goes in there and just does what, I mean, he moves to 10-0 with wins over guys like Omari Akhmedov. I thought he was a good prospect. Blue chip, I didn't know, but you beat a guy like Akhmedov in your 10th pro fight. Yeah, you might be. You might be. Now, of course, the winner of that will have to take on the winner between Rob Wilkinson and Delon Monte. Wilkinson, for folks who might not remember, he had a sort of an unremarkable UFC run. He fought C.R. Bahadurazada, loses. Then he fought a debuting Israel Adesanya or Adesanya.
That's the main thing I remember.
I know. And he was trying like a motherfucker to get that takedown, and Izzy wouldn't let him have it. So that was Izzy's UFC debut. Since then, he actually has done pretty well. He's fought in the UFC twice. Or sorry, what am I saying? He fought in the PFL twice, winning once in 2020. Well, both these are 2022. He beat Bruce Sutto and then UFC vet Victor Pesta. Delon Monte obviously enters this contest off a win over PFL and then formerly, I think even World Series of Fighting standout, Emiliano Sordi. He does have a loss to Shoeface, although I can't imagine the same kind of threats are in play here. Do you have any strong opinions about Wilkinson and Monte?
Not really. I really don't on this one, but to me, you know, it's kind of like the old Bellator brackets where it's like you got one side of I'm not too strong, but like the kind of woodwork guys within it. But then the other fight is like, well, that's your winner. That's the guy that's coming out of it. So that's kind of how it feels to me. I have not really watched Wilkinson in the PFL. I did watch him when he was in the UFC. I haven't really seen what he's done to his game to be a little different. But so I guess I'll be answering these questions a little bit later as I watch this with you, man.
All right, let's move on to topic number four. We have a bunch of fight announcements that we have to get to. We'll just go through these relatively quickly, see what you think. Set for October 15th. I don't have the card in front of me, but Brandon Royval is set to face Askar Askarov. Now, for Askarov, you know, had a real close fight, obviously, with Kai Kara France, who just lost. A win over Royval. By the way, Royval has a win over Kai Kara France as, well, not, I won't say as well, but has one. Big fight for Royval. This would be his best win to date. But for Askarov to get a win over Royval, it's not like that would represent necessarily his best win, but it would be a you're talking about two guys who are well-suited for each other. And Askarov is kind of like he needs a little bit of momentum to get back into that title picture. A win over Royval certainly helps.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know about you, but I've had Askarov like circled for a while. It's not quite like the Zabit back in the day, like where you're like, that guy's going to be a champion. But I've had him circled like where you're like, I felt like he was going to be a champion at some point in his career. I really haven't come off of that. I saw him in Mexico City when he fought Brandon Moreno. And I remember, you know, it was just being like, you watch some of the things he's able to do and they're very closely. And you're like, man, this guy is good. So I still feel like he's the guy with this tremendous upside in this division and who will obviously factor in there at some point. But I love this challenge for him, man. Like going against Brandon Royval, who's also stood in there against the good guys. And I think this was a big fight for Brandon Royval, right? Like losing two in a row, you can't make it three and stay in that picture. So it's a big one for him, and it's a very tough match for him to have to, you know, break a losing streak.
No doubt about it. We move to Angela Hill taking on Lupita Godinez. This will be August 13th coming up at UFC San Diego. Hill, obviously out of the San Diego area. Hill had, you know, she was pushing up there against the top of that division, and there's probably a couple times that I thought she deserved the nod and didn't get it, which is unfortunate. And now she has to kind of resettle back at a lower part of this division, still against relevant opponents and relevant matchups. But
yeah,
that was a tough stretch for her, for sure.
Yeah, And again, she's, what is she, like three in a row? So you want, she's kind of been a staple, and I feel like she's one of those game fighters who's like, yeah, just let, short notice, whatever, let's do this thing. So
yes.
Another tough spot for her, but man, I for her sake, I hope she comes through in this one, man.
Amanda Hibas taking on Tracy Cortez. Boy, I wish BC was on the show for this one. Good Lord.
Why? Which one does he love here?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, all of it. All okay. of it would be the answer. UFC UFC Fight Night. It'll be December 3rd. An interesting one. Hibas, I think the UFC had kind of circled as like, oh, future title mm-hmm. challenger. And then she does have some obviously very good ability, but she has got some real known weaknesses too. Tracy Cortez, I thought in her last fight looked good, but kind of struggled a little bit down the stretch in that fight, although she won. Good matchmaking. I like this matchmaking. Yeah. This is good for the division. This is a nice... this one could definitely go either way, and sometimes a lot of these fights don't.
Hibas had so much buzz just recently. Like, you know, not that long ago, man. I feel like if she slips here, maybe that buzz goes away forever, to be honest. But I still believe in her upside, man. Like, she's... You know what I mean? Like, I still feel like she's she'll be a player in the division within the next couple of years. So this is a big... it's a good match for her, but it's also a big one for her.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They have one on here, which I know for a fact is off, so I'm not going to read that one, producers. then we move to Matt Schnell taking on Mateus Nicolau. This will be, again, December 3rd, the same card as Hibas and Cortez. Schnell, you ever interviewed Matt Schnell?
I have not, no.
Dude, he's a smart guy. He's a different dude. Like, he really is... a lot of times when I talk to fighters, and this is boxers too... When they're really dead set on it has to be my way, they fail to calibrate that correctly. They think that, like, literally they have to do everything a certain way, which is their own way. And I find that that's, you can do that for a while, but eventually gets you into trouble.
Yeah.
The kinds of fighters that are the best that have that inclination are the kinds that also know how to put the brakes on and hand the reins off on occasion while still making themselves, it's hard to explain, they still make themselves their own, the nucleus of their own operation. Mm-hmm. And then you get guys who just hand everything off, and I don't think that's good either. He kind of really deftly swims in both of those. Anyway, I interviewed him after his last win over Sumadarji at that ridiculous Long Island fight. Do you interview fighters at all anymore? Like, is that a thing that you do?
Rarely. Over the last, like, year and a half, since leaving The Athletic, basically, I have not been talking to as many fighters. But, yeah. But, most of them I've talked to at some point in time, but just never had the chance to talk to Max, so.
Well, as it stands, this is just seems to me like a rankings fight. Schnell, I should say, sitting at 8. Mateus Nicolau sitting at 7. So it's 7 versus 8 here. That they make these matchups a lot. Nicolau is a good fighter and has good wins, although one of the best wins probably via split. He's been in the UFC since 2015, but has been like fairly inactive. He had one fight in 2016, one in 2017, one in 2018, a loss.
Wow.
Twice in 2019, skipped 2020 completely. And then in 2021, he's been on a real nice win streak. He beat Manel Kopp, he beat Tim Elliott, and then he beat David Dvorak in his last contest. All of them, though, by decision. And a guy like Matt Schnell is not that kind of guy. And by the way, Nicolau has fought as high as bantamweight. He's back to flyweight. Good fight. Nothing super special to say about it.
Who do you favor in that one, man? You like Schnell?
I do like Schnell. Schnell's got a lot of ability.
Yeah, I
probably would take Schnell in that one.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, it's close.
Yep.
All right. On the Bellator side of things, you have Patricio Pitbull taking on Adam Boric. I love this fucking contest at 145. Bellator 286, October 1st. Patricio Pitbull doing what I thought was impossible, getting his title back from AJ McKee. Adam Boric had a fucking blood and guts fight against Mads Burnell in his last contest to get this. Dude, you gotta love this contest. People always talk about, like, where's the quality outside the UFC? Them two motherfuckers there.
And nobody talks about Boric, man. They should be 100%. Dude's like, I mean, he has that one loss to Caldwell, right? Like, and otherwise he's just like, he's must-see theater, man. I love watching that guy fight. He always brings it. So this could be his moment. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't put it past him to do this thing and get this victory and suddenly change everything in that division. But I love watching that guy fight, man.
Last but not least, I touched on this very briefly, I think, with Danny. I would love to get your opinion, but it's one of the fights that's been announced this week. AJ McKee who, by the way, was wearing PFL shirts on a PFL broadcast, which is just like, I don't know what the fuck is happening there.
Kids angling.
Yeah, he's taking on Spike Carlisle. And now this is going to be a Bellator 286 at lightweight, so he's going to go up a weight class here. Here's the thing. I don't love this fight. Now, when I say that, let me explain what I mean. Do I think it'll be an action fight? Spike Carlisle doesn't fight any other way. It's up a weight class, so you wouldn't want to throw AJ McKee to the wolves in that sense. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. But on paper, the difference in ability there, in terms of what they've shown, is dramatic. Dramatic difference in upside. Spike Carlisle is very athletic, but he takes a fucking ton of abuse. We'll see what McKee looks like at 155, but this could be... I'll say this. If McKee loses this is a real bad sign.
No, and I think that that's what they're... I mean, I would think that's kind of how we're looking at this, too. It's like, well, it's a bounce-back fight. Maybe he doesn't have to kill himself, you know, making the weight. All that stuff, you know what I mean? Like, it's a bounce-back fight. He can get back in there. It's very difficult to know. Like, I've had a lot of questions from people who are like, you know, did he piss off, you know, Bellator Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some of that in play, right? Especially when, like, not only are you talking before his fight with Pitbull, you know, you're talking about potential UFC fights, which is always bizarre to, like, for a guy to do that. But also, like, you just mentioned, I didn't see this, but if he's wearing a PFL shirt, I mean, it just seems like there's some acrimony there behind the scenes or something like that.
Well, they didn't give him the toughest fight they could have given him. I mean, again,
true.
You don't want to be
that is true.
In MMA, you know this. Like when Tim Sylvia was fighting Ray Mercer, I was like, poor Ray Mercer. I mean, old Tim's going to beat his ass. And then Ray Mercer just decked him that one time and that fucker just fell like a a big ass tree.
That is so true.
You got to be
careful.
Do you
have the odds? Do you have the odds on this one? I don't see them.
Great
here, but,
question. Let me see. I do have
I was just curious as to what this would
It's a great question.
AJ McKee, though, I mean, like, dude, he's still, I don't know how you feel about him, but I felt like he was kind of nearing that true star status where you're like, man, it just felt compelling, everything he was saying and everything he was doing. And you got to see how he bounces back. It's kind of he's still so young, his dad being who he is and all that stuff. I still believe in that guy.
I don't have odds up here. I'm looking at best fight odds, which is where I typically go to. They don't have him listed yet, but.
All right.
Yeah,
I'm sure
buddy.
He'll be a sizable favorite.
Yes, to put it mildly. All right, a few quick hitters here for topic number five, just a few of them, and then we'll play a little game to close out the show. But topic number five, where are you on Clarissa Shields? Because accordingly, she is going to be fighting on a PFL championship card in November. Now, I give her a lot of credit. She is trying a thing that most boxers won't. Now, of course, she's doing it because the economic incentives make sense for her in ways that they don't on the men's side. We should be very clear about that. But nevertheless, it is a difficult thing she is attempting to do in fighting MMA fighters who don't have, obviously, any of her boxing experience or maybe her athletic ability, but they've got a lot of MMA or jiu-jitsu that can make life difficult for her. Here's my thing, Chuck. Tell me if you're on the same level, which is I'll watch this. I have a lot of respect for Clarissa Shields, but if she's going to be mostly boxing and then kind of moonlight in MMA, this is all it's ever going to be.
Yes. That's how it feels. It feels like cameoing. Like she's just, I'm still vastly intrigued, to be honest, but we were just talking about Jeff Neal. I think that they're just two different sports. I think if you're going to do MMA, you have to go, you know, both feet, right? Like you got to do it all. And, I know she's got the name. I just don't know if it will translate that way. I appreciate it. If she's making good money doing it, go ahead and do it. You know, like, it'd be like Herschel Walker almost, like moonlighting and like, you're like, yeah, go ahead, see what you can do. But she has a boxing match, right? Like in September. So it's that's always fun too when they've got like two things on the horizon, which you don't see in MMA strictly. So I'm intrigued with her in general, man. I think I'll watch like whatever she tries to do, but I don't really have high expectations for her MMA career. You know what I mean? Unless she really says, like, I'm going full-fledged into that, which I don't really think she should. But if she did, I don't have the highest expectations, but I'll still tune in for sure.
She has a fight against Savannah Marshall, which is going to air on ESPN+. And for folks who may not know, Marshall, I think, beat her in the amateurs. Now, they've had different careers since then. I suspect Shields will win, but... something to keep in mind. I mean, that's sort of where I'm at. It's cool. I appreciate it. I would love to see how well she could do. prove us wrong, you know. But she just kind of is a boxer, like hanging out in MMA.
Yeah, what's
the story
like.
There,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. How about this? Conor McGregor set to make his acting debut alongside Jake Gyllenhaal in a remake of Roadhouse. And apparently McGregor's going to have like more than just a hello kind of thing. He's going to have a speaking role, apparently a significant speaking role. And Jake Gyllenhaal is going to play a former UFC fighter, you know, turned fucking shitty bouncer in the Roadhouse remake. Got to tell you, you know this movie is going to be doo-doo. I mean, it's going to be the worst. But I'm probably going to see it. What about you?
Are you a fan of the first one?
I mean, in the sense that, like, there's 80s nostalgia, pain don't hurt type bullshit. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it was fun in the day. I watched it. It didn't hold up as well, but I don't know. I don't know what to expect. This is the second time we've contemplated this, by the way, because Ronda Rousey was cast in this in some kind of role of a remake back in the day, like a few years ago, which never materialized. The only thing that's surprising about this is I remember Conor McGregor very distinctly saying he had no interest in acting, didn't want to mess with Hollywood, you know, that he had offers, but he wasn't doing it. So obviously we've had a change of philosophy here. And there is a little bit of curiosity, like how he'll do. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'll definitely be, I like the first movie, if I'm being honest, man. But I'm like, I'll probably go see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be bad. Let's just be very clear.
Oh, yeah. That has to be the expectation. Yeah.
I'll watch it. Have you ever watched the McGregor documentary? I can't bring myself to watch documentaries about fighters whose careers I've covered.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
No. Are you talking about the Notorious one?
Yeah. Like, it's on airplanes and, you know, I see it on.
No, I haven't seen that. I have not seen that.
I'm told it's good. Like, again, I'm not shitting on it. I'm told it's good. And by the way, this is like, to me, it's like, you know, you never want to overly be like, oh, because McGregor's in movies, he won't fight again or he won't fight well again. But it's almost like I'd almost rather see him do this stuff than the other stuff, sort of. Like,
yeah,
I feel like this, to me, like when I heard this, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
You mean they're like stuff like Whiskey Baron and all that stuff, like
mind that. Look, dude, this is where I always come back to with him, and you know, I don't know what is in his competitive heart, and Brian and I have kind of agreed that, like, I do think that Conor has at least one like very good win left in him, right?
Yeah,
although that remains to be seen, but I do feel that way.
Yes,
but like, it's like, dude, you beat the game, you know, you made all the money in the world. You had the first to hold two titles at once. You got in. I would actually like to see him get out because, you know, these other guys who are in that way unfulfilled, they're way, way hungrier. And, dude, this is the other part of the game. Like, when you begin to, like, pay attention to the science of fighting and the way that I try, it moves like that. It moves like that.
Yeah,
if you take
man.
As much time off as he does, you are missing gobs of time you can't get back.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Like, once you kind of get to the certain set, and we've never seen anybody do this in MMA, by the way, you know, like a guy who is able to make whatever, I don't even know, because obviously a big portion of that came from the boxing event with Mayweather, but he was able to ascend into like the Forbes top athletes for years in a row and all that stuff, which we just never see. I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I kind of side with you. I'm like, I don't really need to see him do too much more. Honestly, like in this, in the space and the fight world, I've seen enough. But do we cling to it just because we remember like so fondly, like the boom period when he was doing it? Like, I feel like people still want to matchmake him into all these different ways and throw his name out there. People still call him out, obviously, because he's a money fight, but I feel like journalists, you know, like, are they, is the clinging to like the old magic, is it just saying like, yeah, but it was a lot more fun with him around. Let's get him back rolling again. You know what I mean? I feel like that's what people want. He's like the party. He shows up, the party starts type thing.
And also people kind of treat fighting a little bit simplistically. Like you're a bartender and you've been off for vacation for a year and then you just get back to working a shift.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not here to say like, you know, being a bartender is easy. I don't think that, but like, you can miss a couple of years and go back and get your feet under you relatively quickly. Dude, fighting at this level is not like that at all. Like, there is a window where you can do it, and you have to marshal your athletic forces, your psychological forces, your the things that are happening around you in your life and everything else. All of this has to be summoned if you want to be fighting guys like Khamzat Chimaev, like Mateus Gamrot. You know, you have to live a very, very different way. And Conor beat all of it. He beat all of it, you know, in the most dramatic of ways. Like, it's like, dude, you already won. It's almost gratuitous to keep doing this in a way. And I just, you know, with the way the fight game's going and like, you know,
He's a material man, though. He's a material man. He's gonna, you know, he's still gonna take some of these fights for that money. So he's going to
fair enough. Which is part of the trade. Yeah. And I will watch. You know, it's funny. I'm gonna bit of a teaser here. I interviewed W. Kamau Bell, the comedian and author and producer. And I asked him, "Are you a Conor fan or a Conor hater?" And the conclusion that he came to was that he was a Conor customer. In the end, that's what we are. Conor customers, you know what I mean? We're Conor customers. That's just how it goes.
100%,
including with Roadhouse. All right, last but not least, Logan Paul looking to make a return to boxing before the end of 22. Apparently, he told Pat McAfee, "I'm a boxer again." Well, it doesn't quite work like that. But, quote, "We're getting back in the ring. We're going to go from professional sport to professional sport. I want to get a fight in December. I have some people in mind, but I can't say. You know, you only get one first impression. That's part of my ability to make moments. I like making first impressions big, so I want to wait until we're ready." I'll say this for this kid. I mean, my level of interest in watching him box is low.
Yes.
Will say this. Someone sent me some highlights. Look at BC. Huh? Probably holding looking, in the world's most disgusting fart imaginable. But... Someone sent me some highlights of Logan Paul, I guess it was like on SportsCenter's Instagram, doing whatever the fuck he was doing at a recent WWE event he was competing on. He actually looked to be pretty fucking good at it. Now, I don't know shit about professional wrestling, so if I'm wrong, by all means, people out there can dead wrong me or whatever, but I did see some potential there, which seems right because he is athletic, he does have a big mouth, and he knows how to use it and self-market and comfortable in media roles. The boxing thing for me is like, I don't care.
Right. Well, I'm with you too, man. There's really not a lot of interest from me on that. But I will say that both Pauls, it feels like whatever they try, and I give them a ton of credit because whatever they try is fairly successful. They're pretty good at it. I did see the wrestling thing, and you know, the guy looked like he had been doing. That's not an easy thing, even choreographed and, you know, following what you're supposed to do, but to make it look, you know, in the world of pro wrestling and as natural in that world as you're supposed to, he looked like he'd been there for years. You know what I mean? He was able to, like, I don't know, like a frog splash. I don't know the actual terminology, but he went off the top rope outside and through a table, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool to see. I mean, I don't really pay that close of attention, but I mean, he's pretty seamless at these things. And so is Jake at just kind of like jumping into other areas and handling it. But I will say that my level of interest in his boxing career is pretty low as well. Obviously with Jake, there's a lot of intrigue, but it feels like that's more his terrain. I just don't have that same thing with Logan.
God bless him. All right, let's play our game and we'll end the show on this. It's time, Chuck Mendenhall.
Yes, sir.
For a game we call let's Buy or Sell.
Boom.
I think we have some graphics. There we go. Yeah, we do.
Love
All right.
It.
We got 10 of these. Are you buying or are you selling? Number one, the flyweight champion in 2023 will not be named Moreno or Figueiredo. Oh, shit.
Did you cut out? Say something again, Luke.
The flyweight champion in 20... Okay. You can see it on the screen, too. The flyweight champion in 2023 will not be named Moreno or Figueiredo. What do you think? Buying or selling?
I am buying that. I'm going with my boy Askarov. I was just mentioning this whole thing. I think that he leaps back into the picture and he's going to have it.
I'm going to sell that. I think it's going to be one of the two. How about that? Yeah.
Plus you think Figueiredo going to be able to get down to that weight again? That's the big concern, right? Like, that's the whole thing.
I don't
thing.
Know. Yeah, that part I don't know, but I think one of the two will be able to hold on to it.
All right.
Number two, buying or selling. Sean O'Malley will be ranked inside the top seven after his fight with Piotr Jan. Now, we didn't say he was going to win. We didn't say he was going to lose.
Yeah.
We just said he's going to be ranked up there after his fight with Jan.
Ooh. I'm buying. You know why I'm buying? Because I think he's going to beat Peter Yan. Is that
Are
crazy?
You out of your fucking mind? Do you really think
he's going to beat him? Yeah. I think he's going to beat him. This is set. It just sets up, man. I mean, sometimes you have to look past the, the rankings, but not even just that, but even like all of the visual evidence and context and everything, you know, the styles, all of that. You have to then just look at the pattern of chaos that the UFC goes through like all the time. And I could just see this after a fight where I think it was largely anticlimactic with Pedro Munhoz, where now he gets this ridiculous opponent nobody expected him to get in this big card out in Abu Dhabi, and then he goes in there and wins it. I could just see the scenario happening, that's all. Just a gut feeling.
I'll say this, to the point again, when I saw Ray Mercer beat fucking Tim Sylvia, I was like, anything is possible, truly.
Yes.
Anything is possible. Sean O'Malley 100% can beat Yan. I'll say this, Yan should not lose this fight. He should not lose this fight. All
I
right.
can agree with you on that.
Number three. Featherweight will have a USA-based champion before the end of 2024, meaning, obviously, Volkanovski, who is from Australia, would no longer be the champion in that case. Now, that doesn't mean he loses it. He could give it away. Who the fuck's to say? But by the end of 2024, now we're asking like 2 years in advance here plus.
Sure.
Volkanovski won't have it. Buying or selling?
I am going to sell that.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to buy it, but go ahead. Tell me why.
Are you? Well, yeah. I'm going to sell it only because I, right this second, and these are tough, man, like because so much happens within a year given, and we're talking about 2024. That's a ways off, but I just think that Volkanovski is that good, you know? I feel like he's that good where if he loses or whatever happens, it might be because he bounced to lightweight and eventually he was just stripped of it or had to, you know, forfeit his belt. Like, that's how it would happen, but I honestly don't foresee that happening. So I think he retains it.
See, I'm going to say he doesn't because he's 33 now. He turns 34 in September, so about a month away. He turns a little bit more than that, like 6 weeks or so. He turns 7 weeks. He turns 34. Add another 2.5 years to that. You know, you're talking about 36 at that point. That's hard to be a 36-year-old champion in this division.
These are tough, man. We're forecasting all the way to 2024. These are tough.
Yeah. Listen, these are stupid, but that's why we play that game. All right. Number four. Here we go. Buying or selling? All right. We're going to stick with Volkanovski. Alexander Volkanovski will not compete at lightweight in 2023. Buying or selling?
Oh, selling. I'm selling that, man. I think that, I mean, he's already, like, he wants to do this very badly. I think, and like you mentioned, his age. Like, I think there's a point in time where you're like, you know what, man, I don't want to mess around too long. I want to go, if I'm going to make history, I'm going to do these things. I want to do it now. And he's at the top of his game. I think for sure he's headed to lightweight at some point very soon.
I would agree. I think that's right. I think there's probably at least one lightweight fight in that year. Okay.
Yeah.
Number five, Kamaru Usman will stay at 170 for the rest of his career. UFC career. Buying or selling?
I'm going to buy this. I'm going to buy this because I feel like he's, what does he have, like 5 defenses right now? Like he's been doing very well, like, and he's starting to enter that GOAT conversation in that division, which had a GOAT in the sport, you know, just an all-time UFC fighter in George St. Pierre. I think that he'll want to break that if he potentially can. And to do that, he's going to have to stay there. And at the end of that run, I think that he would be fairly through the game, to be honest. I don't know who else would be left for him and his age and all that stuff. So I'm going to say he's going to stay there and he's going to try to get that record.
I think he's going to do it almost exclusively like St. Pierre did, and then try and get one last one. Ooh, up a weight.
I can see that. I can see this.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. Number six. We will see Izzy fight Pereira at least twice in the UFC. Now, of course, they've already fought twice in kickboxing, but we're talking about 2 times in the UFC. Buying or selling?
I'm going to buy this.
Yes, I agree. Go ahead.
I'm going to buy this only because I feel like they've now tapped into this natural rivalry. And obviously, Izzy is bothered by this whole thing. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be predicated on whether or not Alex Pereira wins this fight. Although that would be huge. If he wins this fight, obviously, we're going to see it again. But even if he puts up a very good showing and throws doubt into the thing, makes a competitive fight and all that stuff, which I think he will, I think that the storylines would be there, regardless if it's in a year's time or whenever it will happen. I think that they'd see each other again.
I agree completely. All right, number seven. The light heavyweight title will not be defended more than twice by the same person in the next 3 years. So understand that they could win the title and defend it two times, but never more than that over the next 3 years. Buying or selling?
So I'm buying that it will not. I feel like now it's a musical chairs thing up there, man. And any given night, a lot of those guys, I feel like anybody could beat the other guy within that top space. It's the now that John Jones is out of there, right? Like, he's no longer the landlord of that division. I feel like you're going to have a lot of guys changing hands. I feel like it's going to be like it used to be back in the day when it was just a hot potato. I mean, and there's no one guy coming up. Like, when John Jones was coming up, you're like, well, that might stay with him for a long time. There's no one guy, is there, like, that you see that's like he's going to get it and he's not going to let it go?
No, I don't see that. I see you could maybe argue on Kalayev. On Kalayev is about as close as that you come with that. But even then, he is not. It's just hard for me to see, like, well, on Kalayev is the only one you could maybe say that about.
I would agree that he's, if anybody's going to do it, it'd be him, I think.
All right, number eight. Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury will begin contract negotiations before the halfway point of 2023. Buying or selling?
I'm buying that.
Yes, I'm buying that completely.
Yeah. It's. I mean, come on, man. It's a big payday. We've seen this. And I'm buying that 100%.
All right, number nine. Rose Namajunas will retain the strawweight title, let's say, through the end of 2023.
Oh, man. So, yes, I'm going to buy that. And this is one of those weird, like, Ouroboros things where it's like one person can beat this person, we beat that person. I think that Carla Esparza will drop the title at some point because this is the kryptonite of Namajunas. And then Rose Namajunas will then beat that person and regain her title.
Agreed. All right. And then last but not least, they put pound for pound here, but I guess we mean, well, I guess you could say pound for pound or goat or whatever. Okay. Valentina Shevchenko will not pass Amanda Nunes on whatever list you have. Most people would, obviously, with Nunes being double champ and having the wins over Shevchenko, they would rank her above Shevchenko. That will not change, right, until Amanda Nunes retires. In other words, as long as she's active, there will always be this imbalance.
Oh, man, that's a toughie, but I will buy that. I will buy
I'm buy that, too.
Yeah. I think just because, you know, they have fought, and I think they will probably fight again. And who knows what happens there, but I think that Nunes right now, that's Manto, especially after what she just did to Pena and showed who she is again, all that stuff. She kind of reinforced it. I think that she stays there.
All right. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a show. Well done, Charles. Deal. You know, we started out with, my earbuds fucking the world up, but we ended on a strong note. I feel like, hey,
you always recover. You recover well all the time, man.
I got a crazy, I didn't want to say anything, I was distracted. I got a crazy ass text message from someone inside of MMA, a manager, in the middle of the show. So now I have to go and deal with that.
Fun times.
It's going to be real fun. No, it's okay. What is going on with you this weekend? I know obviously we have the fights tomorrow, PFL tonight. You going to do anything with the fam?
Actually, it's one of those quiet weekends. Probably just watch the UFCs. I actually contemplated going because it's not too far, obviously, to go down to the PFL. But there's just there's too many like things you've got to get through to make that happen. So I'll be watching all the fights and laying low this weekend, man.
Well, my wife and I were supposed to be in New York City today because tomorrow was supposed to be the Jake Paul fight, and so we had planned to go up there. And then when the fight fell through, we couldn't get a babysitter to do anything this weekend. So that's what I'm doing this weekend.
Oh,
I'm
going
to be, it's cool. I'm going to take my daughter to the pool. Yeah, that'd be good. I like doing that.
You get a picture of her sleeping. I love those ones, that series that you did.
There was like a 2-year period in my daughter's life where I'd be like, all right, we're going to go do something fun, something different. And the first thing she'd do whenever we go there is just fall the fuck asleep.
It's the greatest. It's the greatest.
Right. Kids. Let's see. I want to remind everyone, our socials below. You can take a look there, put up the graphics. You can follow the great Chuck Mendenhall on Instagram, on Twitter. You can follow Morning Combat and me as well. BC will be back on Monday. Yes, he will. So we'll talk to him then. Showtime.com is the label that pays. You can go to Showtime.com, get a 30-day free trial. You can, if you like it, you can keep it. If not, you can bounce. Want to remind everyone, World MMA Awards, World MMA Awards. Put that QR code up there. And again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can just put your phone up to there. Or if you're listening on the audio side, worldmmaawards.com/nominees. So it's plural there on awards and nominees. And then morningcombat.store. Go get your loved
hashtag
ones
repeat,
some merch.
Baby. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. You know, I hate the word repeat, though. Or at least I'm always... I never use it. Sorry, yeah. This is a pet peeve of mine. I'll end the show on this. This is a pet peeve of mine. In the line of work that I did in the military, one of the things, because I did what's called call for fire missions in artillery. So I was positioned, let's say, 20, 30 miles away from the cannons. They obviously can't see what they're firing at, so they're relying on you to tell them what they're firing at, what kind of charge, all different manner of things to tell them what to fire. And the command to repeat is a very specific command. It would basically mean just unload the fucking cannons on them, okay? So you would never say that unless, like, under a very specific circumstance. If you need someone to repeat what they were saying, you say again. So if you're ever watching a military movie and someone's on the phone or the hooks or the Syngar and they're saying, repeat that? Bitch, no. The military consultant fucked it all up. You would never say, I repeat. You would never, ever say it. So I always go, right, say man. Again. I say again.
All right. Well, listen, how about this? Hashtag back to back, baby. Here we go.
Yes. There
now
we go.
Now we're talking.
Back right. to fucking back. All right. Say again. Yes, it is my birthday today. Yes.
Is it really?
Yes, it's my birthday today.
Jesus,
I'm old as
man.
Shit.
Happy birthday, brother. Yes. Look at that. I get to spend part of your birthday with you. That was awesome.
Yeah, that's right. The nice. The least interesting part of it. No, I'm teasing. Yes, it is my birthday. I'm an old piece of shit nice. Today. So there you have it. All right, Charles. All right. I will see you soon, my friend. Great
yes,
job,
sir.
As always. There it is. Oh, what a nice little graphic. I appreciate that. Very, very kind of you. Thank you very much for all the well wishes and all that good stuff. And I'm falling apart. I don't know how many years on this planet I have left, but I plan to spend them doing things like MK. So there you go.
If it was buy or sell, I would buy that you have at least 10 years left. I would buy.
Yeah,
that.
I'm probably going to buy the farm pretty soon based on the way that I feel. But we'll figure that out at a different time. All right. For the great Charles, Chuck, Iceman, Mendenhall, the man in the hat, for BC, who's back on Monday, for Malka, for CBS, for Showtime, I'm Luke Thomas. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll talk to you all on Monday. And until then, may all of your gains be loyal.